All right, you have two houses. They're both in conventional loans. You have your full entitlement back, but you put zero down for both of these.
Okay? Right.
And you're getting the right. best rates available. Now you have your entitlement. You repeat the process two more times. You buy two more homes. Okay.
Welcome back to the Foxhole. We are back in the fight, and today we've got a guest, and he's a dope dude. He's another one of my teammates from military to millionaire. He's part of the M&M family, and I'm super excited to have him on. His name is Eric Browning, and Eric is a specialty at lending. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But before we do, Eric, if you could please give the listeners and viewers a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, my name's Eric Browning. I joined the Marine Corps when I was 18 years old back in 2005 as an enlisted member. And this was during Katrina, so we had that big hurricane. I went to boot camp, South Carolina, and then North Carolina for MCT. And then I was stationed in Pensacola, learning how to do aircraft maintenance, and eventually in California for F-18s, fixed wing, then ultimately stationed in San Diego at Miramar. So a great duty station. Stayed in for about 5 years. And stayed in San Diego for a couple years after doing government contracting. And then I got recruited by Intel, the computer chip manufacturing company in Arizona, went out to Arizona for about 9 years. But at the same time, I was buying some properties with my VA loan, renovating some properties, and thought that that was pretty cool. Made some money doing that, had some rentals. And I quit that lucrative job, and now I do lending full-time to show other people how to do the exact same thing. So that's where I'm at now.
Ooh, buddy, we got a whole litany of things to talk about today. That's fantastic. All right, dope. So let's hop straight in, brother. Let's hop straight in. Let's talk about you joining the Marine Corps. Now, first of all, why did you make the terrible life choice of joining the Marine Corps?
All right, so I grew up in the like Baltimore, D.C. area.
Okay.
And where I went to school, well, first of all, freshman year, 9/11 happened. We saw all that happening. It was on the TVs. Right. Some of the kids' parents, they worked at the Pentagon. And so it was crazy. And it really gave me perspective on, you know, protecting our country. I kind of always had that as soon as I entered high school. And those kids in that school, I didn't grow up with them. My parents actually sent me there to kind of set me straight, and they performed better academically than I did. Not that I was a terrible student or anything. Basically, everybody went to college, and I was like, you know what? If I go to college, I'm going to kind of mess around. So I'm going to go and do the hardest thing that I can think of in the best branch, and that was join the United States Marine Corps. So that's what I did.
Okay, so the best brand thing might be debatable, but other than that, I'm with you. It's interesting, man, because I thought the same thing in high school. I was like, well, I don't want to throw the 13th grade. I'm going to go to college, and I expect to be messing around. The problem is I got exactly what I paid for, which exactly how I found myself in the Army. And even then, I experienced that same 9/11 event in a college dorm. I thought, and I'm not kidding here, I thought it was a new Godzilla movie. Like, I saw it on TV as I walked in. I thought it was a new Godzilla movie, but I see how that could spin you up. Now, you went through all that, and you've gotten to the Marine Corps. Where did you go to basic at? I went to
Paris Island. Okay. Paris Island, now, South Carolina.
Now, there's two options for the Marine Corps, right? It's Paris Island, and what's the other one?
MCRD in San Diego.
Now, which one is better?
It's the Paris Island one, of course. Okay, so first of all, we had the humidity.
Okay.
We had the humidity. I went during the summer, so I sweat my ass off. We had the sand fleas. That's just where
fleas?
It all began.
Wait, sand what fleas. Is a sand flea? Bugs.
You never heard of the sand fleas. The sand fleas are these
bugs. We got bed bugs in the Army. We got bed bugs. That's all we got.
Yeah, the sand fleas will attack you while you're out running, sweating your ass off. You had fire ants. You had to stay still. I mean, it was luxurious in California, I'm sure, in San Diego, whereas we're, you know, really, you know, going through the environment. We're really having to trudge through the mud and the elements. So, right. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, there's a private somewhere right now in San Diego getting a Starbucks, heading over to heading over to Basic. All right, cool. So, man, so Basic gets done. You get back. Now, you were only in for about five. And I say only in just in context, but you stayed in for about 5 years. Yep. In that 5 years of being a maintenance mechanic or an air maintenance mechanic, was that your initial plan to go in as a mechanic, or did you have a different aim?
So I wasn't a mechanic. I was an avionics technician. I worked on F-18. So yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I thought that working on jets, that's how they sold it. I thought that that would be a pretty cool job. They told me that the A school was in Florida, in Pensacola. So kind of close to home. Like I mentioned, right. I grew up in like Baltimore, D.C. But also it was like a party town. The recruiters, they sell it to you.
Right.
They tell us, you're not far from Panama City. You can go to MTV Spring Break. And I was, getting all hyped up back then. I was like, yeah, sure, I can do that. So, the funny thing is that I kind of wish, I'm happy with how everything turned out, but I do kind of wish that I could have done something maybe a little cooler. The recruiter was like, hey, you got a pretty good score on your ASVAB. You could probably go be a linguist or something. You go out to Monterey, you go to the Defense Language Institute, you stay there for a year. And I didn't know shit, right? And so I was like, God, Spanish was kind of hard, so I probably can't even, do Arabic or anything like that. So I just took the next best thing, or what sounded like the most fun.
That's fair. So and forgive my ignorance, what is the difference between a mechanic and a tech when it comes to aircraft?
Yeah. So there's different parts of the aircraft that you have to maintain, right? So you have the engine. You have the electronics, you have the weapons communication systems, you have the airframe, which is like the parts that hold the plane together. Right. And then you have ordnance, which is, just the munitions that the aircraft will drop on targets. And so you have all these, what they call shops, inside of a hangar, and they're all dedicated to maintaining and supporting a certain part of the aircraft. And I was in avionics. We work closely with the electricians. So I worked on communication, navigation, the weapon systems, not loading the weapon systems, but making sure that they were functional. And then the electricians, they would, I think all they did was like change light bulbs or something.
So. LEDs. And they're plugging in LED lights. I love it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, how did you get into... Where did this whole renovating and all that come from? If you're coming from, working in a plane, because that's, matter of fact, let's skip that. Let's go back a little bit. Mm-hmm. When you say you guys are assigned to a particular vehicle, is it like one vehicle? Is it like, hey, I'm working on Major Perry's plane or Major Perry's aircraft? Or is it like a hangar and anything that comes in there you guys are working on?
Yeah, so you're assigned to a squadron. And the squadron has, anywhere from probably 10 to 25 aircraft, depending on what type of aircraft and how big they are.
Got it.
Unless you're working on like a C-130 squadron, they probably only have like 8 aircraft or something. But so you work on all of those. It's not, you're not dedicated to a specific pilot's aircraft. And in fact, they might go to different aircraft within the squadron as well.
Okay, cool. So there's no jealousy.
Fun fact about Miramar, though, the hangar that I was initially in, I was in two squadrons while I was there. The first one was 242, and they filmed parts of Top Gun in that hangar, in that ready room.
Oh, wow. So this is the last Top Gun, or this is the one before that?
Oh, no, the first Top Gun. Okay. Yeah. When they had Tomcats.
Yeah, when they had Tomcats, it's awesome. All right, anyway, don't get me started on Top Gun. That was an amazing movie. Anyway, now, with that said, let's get back into the real estate part of this. So you've gone through all this, and during this time, you're still single at the time?
No, I had a daughter very young. So as a Marine, there's one of three things that you can do. You can get married super young.
Okay.
You can get into a mountain of debt. or you can have a child way before you should. And so I chose the first and the last one. Got married super young because my girlfriend at the time was pregnant. Had a daughter, great kid. But it, unfortunately the marriage didn't work out. But I think it's for the best. Her mom and I get along really well. My daughter's grown up to be, you know, really good kid.
Awesome.
So, I was married, quickly got divorced though.
Okay. Got it. It happens. And you know, no worries. It does happen.
Yeah, it happens.
Now, so with that said, you have a kid at this time. How are you doing? How did you handle having a child, still doing your Marine Corps job, and then as well, you start slowly leaking into the renovation stuff?
Yeah, so I want to say that I got into real estate by accident.
Okay.
Like I mentioned, I joined in 2005. And I stayed in for 5 years. So from 2005 to 2010. And for the folks that might be too young to remember, 2007 and 8, we had the great financial crisis. So it dominated the news where the economy was suffering as a result of these mortgages that were all coming due and people couldn't make their payments.
Right.
And so it sent the real estate market into a spiral. Prices plummeted and people were basically giving away homes. As an E3 in the Marines with an E3 salary, mm-hmm. And hearing all this stuff going on in the news, I just started collecting BAH like a year prior. I go, you know what? I started looking around and I'm like, I can afford a house. I was like, I don't know really too much about investing or anything like that,
right.
But I think that maybe I should buy a house.
Right.
And I got pre-approved and I bought a house. Now, the lending and real estate practices back then were not as regulated as they are now. And what I mean by that is you have to, as a lender, I'm regulated by the government.
Right.
I have to comply with a bunch of regulations in order to deliver a loan, and it gets checked and it gets audited. And if there's anything that happens, if I put somebody into a loan that they can't afford, I'm the one that's going to get in trouble. Mm-hmm. Wasn't like that back then.
Right.
And
it wasn't.
And folks in the real estate industry would take advantage of people like me. Now, I got taken advantage of because I was entitled to a VA loan, meaning 0% down, where all I had to do was come in with closing costs. Mm-hmm. I was in an environment where people were basically giving away homes. And my real estate agent knew that I had $35,000 in cash and told me that if I don't use that $35,000 in cash to put as a down payment, then I'm probably not going to get into a house. Me being 20, 21 years old, I listened to her because I was like, well, I don't know what I'm doing. And so I put a $35,000 on a down payment on a house I didn't need to, and it was just completely gone. So I could have saved that 35 grand, but I just didn't know any better.
Right. Wow. Okay. Sheesh. Okay. So what I love about that story is that as military, we have a funny habit of just saying, you know what? I've got an idea and this is what I'm going to do. And then we end up doing it. And for some reason, we all look at it and we say, oh, well, that was a good idea. I'm not sure it worked exactly how I wanted it to, but it was a good idea at the time, right? So yeah. I love the fact that you did the same thing that I think most of our military members do, our brothers and sisters do, is just go and then figure it out as we go along. So now looking back on that, hindsight 2020, with the knowledge that you have now with being a lender, how would you go about getting into a property as it stands right now in this wild economy we're living in?
Yeah. So I made a list, okay, anticipating a question like this.
Okay.
And I really think that it really has to do with what your dream is. You got to kind of think about what your dream is 5 to 10 to 20 years from now. And how you're going to get there. So kind of put that dream over there and then work backwards and then see what steps that you can take today to work towards that dream, incremental progress towards that dream. Okay. And so the first thing that you should do is call up a lender and tell the truth about your situation and your long-term dream, and then kind of get a feeling about whether or not they understand it, and maybe if they've done it themselves. If they've done it themselves, or if they understand your dream, then sign up with them, because, you know, not all of them have. Some of them just buy a primary house and help other people get into, you know, just their primary house. And so if that's your dream, is to just have a house, have a family, that's a perfectly good dream. Call up somebody that you feel comfortable with that can help you get to that point. And so work backwards, and then ask questions to understand the program, meaning like the loan program, to that best suits your needs for whatever your dream is, or the first steps of your dream.
Right.
And then all the other stuff is just formality stuff. So providing your documentation quickly. And then once they do that, then they should be able to present you side by side options and be like, look, if you did this, you could do this. You can maximize your VA loan benefit by doing this step, wait a couple years, and then do this step, and then do a couple of more steps after that. But it really depends on, you know, how you want to go about this. And so if you're doing investing and stuff like that, the VA loan, I think, is the best product that you can get into as a newbie, as a beginner, because it's kind of like investing with guardrails. Right. You can go buy a primary home, live in one of the rooms, and then rent out the other part of the house, or like a multi-unit or something like that. And you can even see if this is even ready, if this is even something you want to do. Because some people might be like, man, I hate living with roommates. Or, you know, my neighbor in the next door unit is always bugging me about something. I don't want to keep fixing toilets or whatever. And then you can just go and do something else. And so it's easy to not do it if it turns out that it's not, you're not ready for it.
Right. Now, does it matter, you think, if they go for, let's say, a four unit versus a single family home? Or is it kind of all the same in your thought process as far as VA loan is concerned?
It really depends on the market. It's a good question. Sorry, it's my dog barking.
No, you're fine.
So it really depends. It depends on the market. If you're in San Diego, you're going to have a harder time finding a multifamily, like a four unit, that's going to be something that you can afford. You can do it, but it's going to be tougher. But if you're in San Antonio area, for sure, go and buy a four unit. You can find ones that you can afford all day.
Right. Okay. So then it's even less about the loan itself. It's more about the properties available in said location.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm licensed in a handful of states.
Right.
And California, of course, is just, you know, it's tough unless you're in part of like the more rural areas, you can get something.
Right.
But the, you know, the major areas like San Diego is pretty tough.
Okay. Now what does a good rate, like as of 8/10/2023, what does a good rate look like? And then from your end, do you expect that to go up, down? What do you expect to happen next?
Man, if anybody tells you that they know what's going to happen with rates here in the future is lying to you. None of us have a crystal ball, and none of us can give you a straight answer on that.
Right.
Now
right.
We can speculate, and it really just depends on your opinion of the economy. I'm an optimist when it comes to the economy. I think we're going to be just fine. I think rates are probably going to stay sticky for a while. I think that we experienced a low rate environment as a result of the great financial crisis back in 2008 that lasted for 15 years. And, you know, our upends is here. So we need to take some of the money that we've pumped into the system, out of the system.
Right.
And I think one of the ways we're going to do that is our interest rates. Now, I want to be very clear. A lot of folks, they think that whenever Jerome Powell gets up on the podium and he talks about raising interest rates, 0.25%, 25 basis points, whatever, those are not mortgage interest rates. It's two different things. It's called the Fed funds rate. That's the rate for when banks move money from one bank to another. That's what they charge each other. The requirement to do that. Now, it does influence mortgage rates, but it is not directly affected to mortgage rates. Mortgage rates are, think of them think of them as whenever you get a loan, and let's say 99 of your neighbors also get a loan. Let's say that those 100 loans are bundled up into this package. It's called a mortgage-backed security. Those are sold on the secondary market, like a stock, as like a stock would be sold. And based on the demand of those mortgage-backed securities, that's what affects those rates. Okay. And so to answer your first question, what is a good rate right now? It depends on a couple of things. One, are you buying down that rate? Are you paying for that rate? Two, are you is the lender charging to originate that loan for you, which is offsetting that rate? Okay. So I'd say anywhere from a 6 to a 7 is probably good for like the average person. But here's another thing about rates. Stop worrying about them so much. It's about the monthly payment. If you can't afford the monthly payment, it doesn't matter if your interest rate is at a 3 or your interest rate is at a 10. Okay. Focus on a monthly payment that you can afford comfortably, that's going to allow you to sleep at night. And then when rates go down, you refinance out of it. People get so hung up about getting an eighth of a percentage better. There's always going to be somebody cheaper. There's always going to be somebody cheaper. I'll give you the cheapest rate today, and then tomorrow I'm going to wake up and somebody's going to have an eighth of a point better. Stop worrying about the rate so much. Get into the property and then refinance when it makes sense.
That is excellent advice now that I think about it. Because if you go in, like you said, and you mentioned this earlier, you start with the end goal in mind. So knowing that end goal, hey, I want to pay 500 a month for whatever reason, that's what your number is. I want to pay 500 a month. Knowing that going in allows you to make those right decisions, those proper decisions when deciding on who to go with as a lender. So that makes absolute sense. Now, with that said, you as a lender, you do a lot of single family homes and small multifamily, anywhere between 2 to 4 units. Does the process change as far as getting a mortgage rate when it comes to a larger multifamily unit? Do you know that? And how does, if so, how does that work?
Yeah, so I also do investor loans too. I don't just limit myself to like the 1 to 4 units. I'll do I actually got a contract for a commercial deal today. So
Let's go.
after we get off of this, I'm gonna be working on a commercial deal.
Love it.
Excuse me, DSCR, stuff like that too. Now it really does. There might be what they call loan level price adjustment based on the purchase price. So there's something. Every county has a maximum limit for, you remember how we were talking about those mortgage-backed securities that, are bundled in like 100 at a time? That's just some arbitrary number, right? Those all have to meet specific guidelines set forth by the VA, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, USDA, FHA, whatever loan program that you're using. These guidelines are set forth by them, and they at that loan amount, there's a cap on that loan amount. They have to comply by all these rules. Okay. And so if you go above that amount that's in their guidelines, then the rules could change. Okay. So for example, if you're buying a $2 million property in San Diego, those rules are going to be a little bit different. And it's going to be lender specific at that point. But if you're buying a $700,000 property in San Diego, for example, it's going to be basically the same as your neighbor if he or she went and got pre-approved as well.
Got it. Now, does it, from what we're told and what we're taught, and I think I might know the answer to this. I just want you to give break it down. But
No worries.
for those who are coming into this and they're like, all right, well, I'm going to go and buy a single family or I'm going to go and buy a multifamily. If you could break down the differences between the process, because from what I understand and what I've been taught and what I've learned in doing it is the numbers, how you look at the numbers as a lender for a single family is distinctly different than how you look at them for a multifamily based on not
Oh
looking
yeah.
at the personal credit versus business. You know what I mean? That makes sense?
Yeah. So with a multifamily, I could use projected income on the rents. Let's say that you want to buy a 4 unit. I could use I know that you're gonna live in one, right? So I can't use the existing rental, the existing lease on that, but I can use units 2, 3, and 4, I could use their income as your income to help you qualify for a larger purchase. Okay. So I'm going to take your W-2 income into account plus the other 3 units. And then I'm going to compare that to the cost of the loan for the mortgage for the subject property, the property you're trying to buy, and then whatever other debts you have. And being that it's military, you probably have a $700 Dodge Challenger car payment. I'm gonna get your personal loan in there. I'm gonna get your child support. I'm gonna count all those things and compare those, and I'm gonna get a debt to income ratio. Now, with the VA loan specifically, they kind of don't use a debt to income ratio. They use something else, another calculation called residual income. It's just you need to have X amount of dollars left over. But yeah, you can use the multifamily income to help you qualify for a larger purchase. Oh, did that answer your question?
No, that does answer questions. As a matter of fact, that breaks down something new that I wasn't aware of. I've always been under understanding until you hit the commercial residential lane from that's from anywhere for those who are listening, anywhere from 5 and up, 5 units and up, 5 doors, 5 rooms, 5 houses, whatever, 5 and up, that qualifies as commercial residential. I was under the understanding that the residual income, not the residual, yeah, the residual income part where you're not residual income, let me correct myself. The income from the property, you couldn't count that until you hit that. But you're saying even at 4 units, that can be counted, right?
4 units and below. Then five
Wow.
units, yeah,
Okay.
5 units. Once you get to commercial, it's a different animal. I
Got
stop
it.
looking at your personal income. People often they have a hard time detaching themselves from this income-based loan thing when it comes to commercial properties or DSCR loan, which you can do for 1 to 4 units. It's all about the performance of the asset. And so they take that DSCR ratio. DSCR stands for debt service coverage ratio. I'm going to put it in very simple terms. The
Got it.
easiest way to understand it is think of it like a business. Business makes revenue. That's your rental income. The revenue, let's say it's $1,000 a month. Okay. And then let's say that the cost of the loan is also $1,000 a month. You have a thousand, you divide that by 1,000, and that's 1.00. That is your debt service coverage ratio, that ratio right there. Lenders typically like to see a 1.2 or above, but they will go down to like a 0.75 or a no DSCR because they know, for example, like an investor is going to buy an underperforming asset, renovate it, and get it to performing to like a 1.2 or something like that. So commercial DSCR, excuse me, 5 units and up, or like office, retail, stuff like that. Those all require it's asset performance as instead of income based.
Got it. Okay. Got it. That's new. I did not, well, I knew about the asset base versus everything else, but I did not know that as a 4 unit, you could still count that residual income. That didn't even click to me. Now that I know that makes me dangerous. All right, so we're gonna go back a little bit, and there's one
Oh,
thing
I
I
do need
just
to interrupt though.
go
I
ahead,
do need to
please.
interrupt. When you're doing that, it's for primary residences. For VA loans, it's for primary residences only.
Right. Okay.
You
So
can
let's.
use that projected income on a conventional investment property, right? But for the majority of all loans with folks getting into multi-units, 4 units and below, it's for primary residences. You have to live in one of the units.
Okay. Now we're getting into it. Let's get into the dirty. This is something, and this might take us over a little bit.
Yeah, no worries.
If I am a soldier, sailor, marine, or what do they call them? Seamen now? Seamen, Coast Guard, Air Force, whatever, right? Or whatever I am. What is the quickest way to scale? Because we constantly hear in the groups we're in, even in Military to Millionaire and others, we hear about, hey, using a VA loan, but we never talk about how quickly you can scale with the VA loan. How quick can that happen? And what would your strategy be to scale quickly in today's time?
So I knew that we were going to talk about something like this, and I have a strategy that I've never named it, I've
Okay.
never branded it, and I'm
We're
going
gonna
to
call
name
it a
it right
day.
now.
Yeah, let's go.
And it's going to be called the VA Recycle Strategy. Okay.
Okay. All right.
All right. And so
you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Eric Browning's VA recycling strategy. I love it. Let's go. Come on.
Okay, so the VA recycling strategy.
All right.
After you have your big goal, whatever your goal is, let's say that you want to use your VA loan as a tool to help you with your investing career. But you want to do off market, you want to do wholesaling, you want to do all that other stuff. That's great. That's great. Do all that other stuff, but do this if you have the opportunity as a veteran. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
I should probably talk about your entitlement, your VA benefit entitlement first. Okay. Are you familiar with your VA entitlement and what that even means?
Yes and no. I know what it is. I don't quite understand what it means. What I know is when I last bought a house, I had an entitlement, right? When I went to buy the property that I'm in now, they asked me, hey, did they reset your VA entitlement? And I was like, I don't, you said that like I got a yes button upstairs. I don't know. And they're like, well, we'll check. Yeah. We'll check. And they get back to me like, hey, they didn't reset it. We'll reset it. Because I had the last property for like 3 years. So my VA was already good to go on a reset because I refied out of it. So please go ahead, go into it.
Yeah. What you did was called a one-time restoration.
Okay.
That reset. Okay. So the best way to think of your entitlement, think of it like a 5 gallon bucket. All right. Okay.
5 gallon bucket.
Let's say that 5 gallon bucket has $600,000 in it. Okay. You use up $300,000 of that bucket. So you have how much left over?
Oh, this is a math question. $300,000. My bad.
Yeah, that's right. You got. You have $300. You. All right. So you bought your first house with that first $300,000.
Yep.
That you can go buy a second house in at least a year later for another $300,000, and then that means you are using up. You used up your entitlement. Your bucket is empty now. You don't have any entitlement left.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to continue with the recycling program and then I'm going to caveat. Okay. So let's now go. You have two houses. I recommend that you stay in that first house for 2 years. And the reason, there's a variety of reasons why. Most of them have to do with the VA guidelines that are going to benefit you in the future. But the most important reason is if you decide to sell it after 2 years, you don't pay any taxes on it. Okay. The capital gains taxes, as long as you lived in it for 2 out of the last 5 years,
right?
Once you sell it, you don't have to pay any taxes on it. Okay.
Okay.
So bought your first $300,000 property, lived in it for 2 years, use up the rest of the bucket, and you buy another $300,000 property. You live in that for 2 years. Now you're thinking, Eric, I don't have any entitlement left. And so we're going to do what you just did, where we restore your entitlement. But first, we're going to refinance both of the properties that you have in the conventional loans. Mm-hmm. We're gonna trigger what's called a one-time restoration. And what that does, it restores your entire entitlement, right? But it's called a one-time restoration because you can only do this one time in your life, okay?
Oh shit, I didn't know that. Back me up. I didn't know that. Oh, hell. Talked. Oh, damn. That ain't good. But, all right, go ahead.
All right, you have two houses. They're both in conventional loans. You have your full entitlement back, but you put zero down for both of these. Okay? Right. And you're getting the best rates available. Now you have your entitlement. You repeat the process two more times. You buy two more homes. Okay. And you stay in them each for 2 years. So this is an 8-year-long process.
Right.
All right. Now, if you ever want you have these four homes, you ever want your entitlement ever again, you have to sell all four homes. Right.
Oh.
So that's why I say it's a tool. And perhaps that last house that you buy, maybe that's your dream house. You know, you've done this for 6 to 8 years. You probably have an idea for what you actually want, where you want to settle down for the rest of your life. So, okay. Now the caveat, you can remember that bucket that had $600,000 in it.
Got it.
Yeah, you can buy a house that's more than $600,000 and still pay zero down.
Wait, how are you?
I know, but you can't, you can only do this with one house. So you can do the split entitlement where you buy the $300,000 house and then you buy another one and then your entitlement is gone. Or you can, let's say you have zero houses right now, you buy a $1 million house, it's still zero down, but your entitlement is just all gone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let
And so this
hmm.
is a function of what's
Interesting.
called the Blue Water Act. I think it passed in like 2018 or 19 because folks were like, hey, you know, the market I live in, the Bay Area, Miami, wherever, it's just getting too expensive.
Right.
And I don't want to have to come out of pocket, you know, for for going above this limit that's allowed by the VA. So the VA said, you know what? We're just going to allow you, as long as it's your only purchase, you can go beyond that entitlement amount. Now,
Okay.
another caveat, let's say that we have that same bucket. I hope folks are still paying attention. This is a lot of bucket talk here. So,
I love it. More bucket talk. Keep going.
so you have the $300,000 house that you bought, and you have $300,000 left. Let's say that the next house you want to buy is $400,000. You only have $300,000 left dollars left for the second home that you want to buy. So you have to come up with 25% of the difference from four to three, which is $100,000.
Okay.
The 25% of that $100,000 difference, you have to come up with that out of pocket. Okay. And that's if you
Okay.
want to purchase a home beyond your entitlement.
Okay, that's a lot of so there's a lot of math that was thrown in. You listen and go back. Once you listen to it
Yeah.
again, Eric breaks you the way you break it down is very simple, and there's so much in there now that I know that you told me that I screwed up. Here's my question, right?
Yeah.
Let's assume we're going back to that bucket, right? You got your
Yeah.
bucket. You got $600,000 in your bucket. You poured out half the bucket. You got $300,000 in your bucket. Now, you're paying that loan back. So let's just say, for argument's sake, the loan was
Is
at
this the first loan?
$300,000. Yes, it's the
The
first
first
loan.
loan? Okay.
Sorry, this is the first
Okay.
bucket, the very first bucket we were talking about. Man, I got to work on my
Okay.
callbacks. All right, so the very first bucket, right? So you're paying the three at 300K back. Let's say you get to 200K. You get 200K, you only have 100K left on that loan. Does that 200K go back to your VA loan? So let's say you find a property after another 2 years, it's just gone. I saw you
It's
shake
just
your
gone.
head.
Yep, you use it up. You use it up at the purchase. You don't get replenished. You don't get it replenished unless you get rid of it.
Bro, I messed up so hard.
Hey, you know what? No worries. I mean, but this is, you know, if somebody, let's say that, I mean, most of us mess up with this. I didn't do it right when I first got it. But now that I know all of like the ins and outs, this, what did I don't, I forget what I even called it. The VA recycling,
No. Hold on, hold on,
game.
hold on. We gotta get it proper. The Eric Browning VA recycling strategy. VA loan
Strategy, that's it.
recycling strategy. All right, go ahead, Eric. I sold it. Go ahead, go ahead, go ahead. We got
Yeah,
him. Go ahead.
I mean, if I would have known about this
Right.
and somebody explained it to me and I trusted them, I would have done
Right.
this. But I just didn't know any better. We just didn't know, right?
Bro.
And so,
Oh, I'm so heartbroken right now. Like, I'm hurt. Ah, oh, because I screwed up so hard. In my head, I had this whole plan and layout. I was gonna do this, I was gonna do this, I was gonna leave this property and go buy another four unit and then live in one while family living in this one. That's not happening now. Good Lord. All right, I gotta focus on large multifamily. It is what it is. Oh man, that's awesome though. That is super dope. I'm glad that you broke that down because now we just saved somebody else, and we both know who he's called. We call him Snuffy. We call him Jody. We call him Susan, Jane, whatever you want to call him. We saved that soldier, sailor, Marine, Coast Guard, Air Force. I'm gonna have to find a different way to name all these folks, but we saved all of them the same mistake that we made in doing this. So, man, I can't believe that hurts. All right. Okay. I try not to drop the F bomb. Lord forgive me. I apologize. Anyway, so let's keep going. So now that you've gone through all that and you've broken down how to go about using the VA loan strategy, to your advantage. Is there any other loans that military members can use that's a part of the VA? If I remember correctly, like different categories of VA loan, right?
Yep. Yeah. And
talk
so
about those.
I didn't fully execute the VA loan recycling strategy. I did a variation of it just because I didn't know any better. But what I did do is I used a renovation loan, a VA renovation loan, which is where you finance the repairs into the purchase of the property, and it's still zero down. And so I did this, and I think it's the most underutilized program that's out there right now as far as veterans go. That and one-time close, which is like a construction, right? But I think that the renovation loan is the way to go, because you can get new windows, you can get a new kitchen, you can get paint, you can get something, you can get minimum $5,000 worth of work. Maybe the house just needs new carpet or flooring or something like that. But a way to spruce up the property right at the get-go, fix all the issues, and then all the obvious issues, and then just finance it into the loan with 0% down. I did this personally, and I loved it. Like, I got new windows. The place was great. But folks don't know how to do it. And here's another thing. A lot of lenders don't like doing it because it's a lot of quarterbacking. You got to also have somebody. I'm a broker. And I, since I've done it myself, I like to coach people on how they can do it too. You got to call up the contractor. You got to stay on the contractor. We got to make sure that, I mean, a lot of contractor issues.
Yeah, word up. Yeah. Well, contractor issues are normal. That's a normal thing.
Yeah. But, you know, they might not have the capacity to call them during the day because they're, you know, they're working at their job. Right. And I can call up the contractor and I'll be like, hey, what's going on with this? You know, we're moving forward. You know, you want this person to get into a house, you're holding up the contract. So it's a lot more touches, but I don't mind doing it. And the reason I didn't, when I moved out to Arizona and I was working in tech, I did this renovation loan. I got renters in there. Like I said, I did a variation of this recycling program. And then I sold the house. It allowed me to quit my job, right? With an on-market property that I renovated using a VA renovation loan. And I get real excited about it. And I quit my job to help other people do this too. So, I think folks need to jump on board. Now, the problem is usually is friends and family, because they don't understand. Yeah. And so you either don't listen to them, or you have to compel them and show them that this is possible, that you can make this step. And again, investing with guardrails. You're not taking on a big renovation project. You're not getting hard money, private money. You're not putting 30% down. You're not doing any of that. Using your VA loan, renovation loan, or FHA renovation loan, or something like that, with the least amount of cash down so that you can start your investing career.
All right. So first of all, you have broken my heart so many times on today's show. I'm just not sure if I should even be in real estate investing at this point, just based off of based off of all the bases I missed. Great, Scott. It's amazing. There's just so much you can do with a VA loan. And what's really refreshing is to hear you say that there are lenders out there that do the VA construction loan, the VA renovation loan, because there's so many that don't. And somebody will be disheartened from hearing that, hitting that first person who says, oh, they can't handle it because they don't want to do the work, which is, you know, it's fair. You know, they don't want to do the work. I get it. It's not for everybody. But the fact that there is somebody who is willing to make those phone calls like you and to do that quarterbacking to help somebody out who, let's say, like I do, work in a place where you can't bring your phone, you can't really talk to anybody, you're in a dark place all the time. It is wonderful to hear you say that, because that's important, I think, for you know, whoever's that
folks
person
have
is.
Lives. They're out there supporting their family. You know, they work. Now, I am going to say, I'm not doing all the work. Okay. This is a part-time job for you.
Of course.
This is a part-time job for you. And it's your home purchase. It's the biggest purchase you're ever going to make in your life. Yeah. So take it seriously. I'll assist and coach, but I'm not going to, you know, do everything.
I love it, man. Yeah. I think I still got 400,000 left. Yeah, maybe 300, okay. 4,000 left I can dance with. So I'm a
I'm
a scheme on that. But that'll probably that's the end of the show for me. You know, it is what it is. But nonetheless, we're not gonna talk about me. Let's if you could, Eric, I want you to tell them people who are listening and watching how to get a hold of you, how to get in touch with you. Matter of fact, yeah, no, screw that. We're gonna do that now, and then we're gonna go into right after that we'll do Troop to Task. So go for it.
Okay. Yeah. So you best thing to do is just send me an email. My name is Eric with a K. There's no C. E-R-I-K at GTGFI.com. So that's Golf Tango Golf, Foxtrot India.com. And just put, you know, that you know, whatever it is you want to do. Like I mentioned in that first step, don't limit yourself. Talk. I'm a mortgage broker. Tell me what your dream is and say, how can I get there and what you're thinking? Okay. Right. Now, if you're going to start telling me you want the lowest interest rate, you know, I mean, like, I'll give you the best I can, but I'm not like, it is what it is, you know? Right. So, and then also don't listen to your friends and family, unless they've done a renovation loan, unless they've done a construction loan, unless they've done the VA loan recycling strategy, they don't know what they're talking about, you know? Right. Listen, figure out your dream, and then work backwards.
I love it. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Eric Browning said, tell your mom and dad, shut up. You got this. I'm lying. Don't say that. You will get slapped, and it's going to hurt. Mm-hmm. So don't say that to your parents. Of course not. But make sure on the title, matter of fact, I'm going to throw this in there, Eric. When you send Eric a message, I want it to say, Eric Browning's VA loan recycling strategy. That's what I want you to put in the subject line. Okay. That's the first, that's the only thing I'm going to ask. All right. Now with that said, Eric, let's, I love it. Let's head into Troop to Task.
Hello, 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 hello.
Okay. So today's Troop to Task, or every Troop to Task, that is, for those who are listening and watching, Troop to Task is Eric is going to give you one thing you can do to get started. Right, a troop to task is anything in the military that will say tell a soldier to go from point A to point B. I want you to go down the street. I want you to take a right, take another right to get to the Publix. Right, it's the same thing. Eric's going to give you that one step right now to get you started. And here's your troop to task, Eric. Go for it.
Look at yourself in the mirror and be honest with what your capabilities are and what your purpose here is on this planet. Right. Mm. If that's having a family, and that's providing for a family, and you need to figure out ways to do that, like buying a house, for example, whatever it is, getting a job, be honest about it and your capabilities, and then ask for help for ways to get there and be open-minded about it. Don't limit yourself to just thinking that you know better, because, you know, I've been in this industry for a while. I would consider myself an expert. I learn new stuff about, you know, every single day about it. All right. Be honest with yourself and be open-minded.
Love it. Love it. Great advice, Eric. Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, thank you for listening. Eric, thank you so much for coming on. I'm glad to have you here today, man. This has been absolutely amazing. For those of you listening, watching, make sure you like, comment, subscribe, leave a subject note. Or what is it? A review? That's it. Leave a review and say again, one more time for the camera. Eric Browning's VA loan recycling strategy. I'm telling you, we're gonna make the Burr strategy disappear. That's all people are gonna be talking about. That's all they're gonna say. And it's gonna be long every time because I want it to be that way. Now, make sure you go do that stuff. We love you. Thank you so much again for listening. Remember, you're better than you were, but you're not half as good as you're going to be. Stay in the fight. We'll see you next time. I'm going to get it.